You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Many have called it a revolution, but it is almost 11 months since the overthrow of Egypt's dictator Hosni Mubarak, and the regime he ruled is still, for the most part, in place. While there have been referendums, elections, and many promises, political and economic power remains in the hands of the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. This last year, over 12,000 Egyptians have been imprisoned without charges, more than in the entire 30 years of Mubarak's rule. Despite the increasing repression, the labor and social movements driving the uprisings have persisted. Joel Bainin is professor of history and of Middle East history at Stanford University. He has written or edited 9 books, including most recently Social Movements, Mobilization, and Contestation in the Middle East and North Africa. He joins us by phone from Portland, Oregon, to discuss some of the power dynamics behind events currently unfolding in Egypt. Good morning, Joel, and welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning, Manuel.
So if we look at the forces driving events in Egypt now, where are the main centers of power?
The main center of power is undoubtedly still with the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, or the SCAF, as it is known. There will now, of course, be a newly elected parliament in which Islamist groups, first and foremost the Muslim Brothers, and second the Salafi Nur Party, will have between them about 70% of the seats. And there will also be a significant but much smaller presence of liberals in the party, in the parliament. It's unclear how much power the parliament is going to have. That's the first axis of tension in the situation. The second axis of tension in the situation is that there was even considerable controversy over whether the elections should have gone ahead as planned, because in the immediate 5 days before, there had been once again occupations of the major centers of several Egyptian cities, and this was in protest over the armed forces attacking demonstrations and killing some 4 demonstrators in that particular round of contention, and wounding hundreds. So there is still what we could call a revolutionary movement consisting of young liberals, feminists, workers, and others who are contesting the whole process here.
If we look at some of those movements that are shaping and contesting the uprisings and this kind of process, I guess there's labor and there's some of these student groups and women's movements. You've done studied labor history a lot. What does the labor movement in Egypt look like?
It is still, by and large, not very organized politically. Historically, there was one Egyptian Labor Federation, the Egyptian Trade Union Federation. It was an arm of the regime. It was the only legal trade union federation in Egypt. Since the overthrow of Mubarak, and really beginning in the few years just before, a new trade union federation has been established, the Egyptian Federation of Independent Trade Unions. It has about 100 affiliated unions, most of them newly formed in the last year, some of them, including some of the larger ones, previously affiliated with the Egyptian Trade Union Federation, and now they have disaffiliated and joined this new independent body. Perhaps a quarter of a million members, but that is opposed to about 3.5 million members of the formerly official state-led trade union federation. Like any trade union, it doesn't take political positions. It takes positions on economic and social issues that are relevant to working people. So they do support a minimum wage of 1,200 Egyptian pounds a month. That's about $200. They support the idea that there should also be a maximum wage so that the gap between the richest and poorest should not be outrageously great as it is now, much like in the United States. But they don't say anything about what kind of powers the parliament should have and what kind of powers the president should have, and should Egypt be a secular state, or what should the extent of Sharia law be in forming legislation and things like that.
I guess that's sort of the area of many of the other social movements. How do they play compared to labor? What's their role?
So the radical young liberals, what are sometimes called the Facebook youth, or people who are, let's say, under 40, internet savvy, who have been excluded from the Mubarak regime, not because they lack the skills to make it, but because they didn't have the connections. Those people do have broad political opinions. They are, generally speaking, in favor of what we would call a secular constitution, although secularism is a dirty word in Egyptian politics, much like liberalism in American politics, and it can't be used openly. They are in favor of equality between Muslims and Christians. They are in favor of the guarantee of civil equality of women. They would be in favor of freedom of speech, of minority rights of all sorts. So you have between those young radical liberals, older liberals, in particular Naguib Sawiris and his Free Egyptian Party. Naguib Sawiris is far and away the richest man in Egypt, but he also happens to be a Coptic Christian, so he's worried about equality issues. And you have a newly formed Social Democratic Party. They make up about 15-20% of the parliament, and you could add perhaps some elements of the old Waft Party, the old liberal, more or less liberal party that led the Egyptian independence movement during the British occupation in the interwar period of the 20th century. So they are a minority. They are there. The youth are prepared to go into the street to push their point. Naguib Sawiris is not going into the street, and the people around him are not going into the street. The Social Democratic Party includes a lot of activists who have participated in occupations of Tahrir Square and other demonstrations. So there is a certain group which is prepared to continue the struggle for a more radical change in Egypt than has already occurred. And the big question is, are they going to be able to force the army, and perhaps also at this point the parliament, to give way on these things?
One of the groups that's been very prominent of late is the women's movement, and they've played a very large role in these uprisings. Can you give us a little bit of the a history of that and the effects on Egyptian society of the women's movement?
Yes, women's movement is perhaps too grand a word, because things are more diffuse than that. I mean, we could go all the way back to the early 20th century when there was a very dramatic moment when Hoda Sha'rawi, the widow of one of the wealthiest people in Egypt, arrived back in Cairo from a meeting of the International Federation of Women, International Feminist Organization, and she took off her face veil. When she got off the train, and that was a big demonstration that women weren't going to wear face veil anymore. At that point, that was a habit of only 15% of the wealthiest women in any case, but it was a dramatic symbol. So there's been a certain movement since then, at least, and in fact, even from before, for equality, women having access to first high school education, then university education, limiting the marriage age, limiting the conditions of divorce. Women got the vote in Egypt in 1956, which was the same year that they got it in France, except that in Egypt having the vote in an authoritarian regime didn't matter very much. Women began to go out to work, became doctors, lawyers, pharmacists, all sorts of professionals, and they still are. And hardly anybody contests that. The Islamic movement, which gained strength beginning in the mid-1970s, generally speaking, would like to see women wearing headscarves or even a more elaborate covering. But for the most part, and certainly not the Muslim Brothers, don't argue that women shouldn't be educated or shouldn't work. What they do say is that women's main task is and should always be, under any circumstances, being a wife and mother, that that's their principal obligation in life, that that is ordained by God, that they have to obey their husbands. And it's over those sorts of things that the current struggle about women's rights tends to center. So you are absolutely correct in the demonstrations that began on January 25th of last year and ended up in the ouster of Mubarak on February 11th. Women were occupying Tahrir Square and the squares of Alexandria and other cities pretty much on the basis of exact parity with men. Nobody said that they shouldn't be there, and it was quite a step forward, I would say, for women that they did participate fully and were welcomed. But shortly after, when people began to demonstrate against the fact that the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces has essentially carried out a military coup aimed at preserving many elements of the old regime, women who participated in one of the demonstrations were detained, and they were taken into the basement of the Egyptian National Museum, the museum that houses the pharaonic antiquities right near Tahrir Square, and they were given virginity tests. And this, of course, was a huge outrage. And women complained about it. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International issued reports about it. And in response, one of the generals said, well, these girls are not like your daughters and my daughters, and we have to be sure that they were virgins, because otherwise, if they were detained, they'd accuse us of raping them or something, you know, truly outrageous thing. And only a week ago did an Egyptian court finally rule that it is illegal for the army to give women who they detain virginity tests. So the women won a big victory here, but you can see by the way that this is contested, and that this happened in March, and it's only in late December that the legal system finally decided, no, that's out of bounds, we can't do that. So it's slow, it's difficult, it's far from completed, and it will be decided by the extent to which Egyptian women themselves have the stamina and organizational capacity to continue struggling around these issues.
In terms of the organizational capacity of these various groups, how do you see that playing out in the future? Do you see an increasing capacity, or what are the challenges they face?
The elections clearly show us that the two most organized forces in Egyptian politics are the Muslim Brothers and the Salafis. The Muslim Brothers were expected under any reasonably fair electoral system. They were expected to get more than 30% of the vote. As it turns out, they got almost 50% of the vote. the Salafi Nur Party. That was a huge surprise. They had not been a political presence under the Mubarak regime, and no one imagined that they would get about a quarter of the vote, which is what they have got. None of the other political parties, neither the legal political parties of the old regime, a few of whom have survived into the current era, nor the dozen or so newly formed political parties since February 11th of last year, have a very strong national level organization. None of them have gotten more than 6 or 7% of the vote. The WAFD party, which is a party of the old regime that I mentioned before that led the national struggle in the interwar period of the 20th century, they got a little bit more than 6%. But altogether, as I said, they amount to about 15-20% of the parliament, all of the newly formed or newly legalized parties and parties that emerged out of the revolutionary movement, except for the WAFD, which has a 80-year-old history in Egypt. None of them are well organized at the national level. They will, presumably, now that it's legal and once there is a parliament installed, work on this. See, in some cases, the army and the security forces, who are the same security forces as there were under the old regime, will impede that, but they'll have an easier time than they did under Mubarak, and we'll see how well they do.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning. It's been very interesting.
Thank you for calling.
I've been speaking with Joel Benin. He is professor of history and of Middle East history at Stanford University. He has written or edited 9 books, including Social Movements, Mobilization and Contestation in the Middle East and North Africa, and The Struggle for Worker Rights in Egypt.